Morning. Today's daf in Yuma Chaf Gimel. We are on Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud, about six lines from the bottom. We are starting this morning with the words Amar Yehuda Mishmos at the end of the line. Gemara over here is going to be continuing our discussion from yesterday regarding Shaul and David, contrasting, comparing the Malucha of Shaul and the Malucha of David. We're going to continue along those lines. Why are we here? We're in the second parak of Yuma. So how do we get on to discussion regarding Shaul and David? So the answer is that the Mishnah described the pius, the lottery that was taking place in the Beis Hamikdash on a daily basis, not only on a daily basis, but four times a day. So there would be Dalat Paisos, there would be a total of four lotteries. So yesterday we started the second parak of the Masechta, and we opened up with a Mishnah that discussed the first pius, the first lottery. It was for the Trumas Hadesh, and we're going to be discussing Trumas Hadesh in some detail. Yesterday we touched on it. Today we're going to be talking about it. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about it. The mitzvah of Trumas Hadesh, and the pre-dawn of Oda, in which a Kohen is going to be going up and taking a shovelful of the ashes and bringing it down off the Mizbeach. That is the mitzvah of Trumas Hadesh. Later this morning, we're also going to be talking about the mitzvah of Hotzas Hadesh, and that's the removal, the remainder of the ash. So those activities are avodas, even though they're not done during the day. Because they're not done during the day, the Gemara said that as far as the Kohanim were concerned. So their thought process is like, it's an avoda, but it's not like a real avoda. In other words, yeah, we're not doing it during the day. So there had to have been a little push and pull, which we learned yesterday, in terms of incentivizing the Kohanim to come and wake up early in the morning. On the other hand, there's a lottery, so you're going to get there, and I don't know, you may not win. So as we learned in yesterday's daf, there was a couple of bonus avodas that were handed to the Kohen who was awarded the Trumas Hadesh, the Cedar Maracha, the addition of the Shnei Gzira Eitzim. So that is what we discussed in yesterday's daf. Why the pious? Why the lottery? Well, it used to be it was a competition to see who gets up to the Mizbeach first. And the Mishnah related yesterday that it was a competition that ended not well. Now, if you think yesterday's Mishnah story is bad, wait till you get to today's daf. You don't have to wait. It's coming up in today's daf. We're going to be learning another story that where tragedy occurred as a result of competition. Okay, so that's coming up as well. Okay, we're still not up to the parts of Shaul and David yet. It's coming up in just a moment. So fine. So that was the opening of the second parak, which we did yesterday. And the Gemara says, now as far as counting is concerned, so you can't count the Kohanim, because in general, you're not allowed to count Jewish people. You're not allowed to take a census, and you can't count. So what do you do? This issue already existed back in the Torah. So in the Torah solution was, everyone gives a machitzas a shekel, and you count the machitzas a shekel as far as the Nevi'im are concerned. So they also had solutions as well. Shaul took a count a couple of times, in order to build an army and see how many soldiers were there. So on a couple of occasions in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, Perek Tes Vav, we covered it yesterday. So he counted with shards of pottery. He counted with sheep. So Shaul went about in terms of taking account, not counting the Jews themselves, but using other things as well. And that brings us back to the Kohanim. The Kohanim are going to be doing a pious. So how are you going to count the Kohanim? You don't count the Kohanim. You count the fingers of the Kohanim. Every Kohen is going to be extending a finger, you count the finger, and that's how the pious, and that's how the lottery is going to be done with the Kohanim, by not counting them, counting their finger. As I pointed out yesterday, using shards of pottery, using sheep, using coins, so that's good. In other words, now you're not counting the person. It is a little bit challenging to understand how, I'm not counting the Kohen, I'm just counting his finger, right? You see the difference? Okay, so as I admitted yesterday, it's not... That difference, that distinction is a, right? It's obviously a much finer distinction, but okay. That's what we learned yesterday. So as long as Shaul came up in conversation yesterday, the Gemara says, okay, couple words about Shaul, couple words about David HaMelech. Now the Gemara did have some critical comments to make regarding Shaul yesterday, but also the Gemara says you gotta be cautious, you gotta be careful about how you talk about Shaul HaMelech. We ended off yesterday with an incident, with an episode. Rav Nachman had a somewhat critical comment to make regarding Shaul. A comment, by the way, that's not beferish in the Navi, meaning he went slightly off script. And so for that, Rav Nachman experienced terrible nightmares, and he understood that you got to be careful about how you speak about Shaul. Good. That's where we ended off yesterday. Okay. So, and with that, we pick it up right where we left off yesterday. So I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmul. So we're now in the bottom of the Amud on Chav Beis Amud Beis. So the Gemara tells us, "Mimei malo nimshcha machus beishal." So Beishal, so it didn't last that long, meaning it was Shal Malucha, and that was it. And it didn't go beyond that. So why not? Because as far as Shaul's was concerned, so he had no skeletons in the closet. I know it sounds funny, right? I'm obviously borrowing a phrase that we have nowadays, but that's basically what the Gemara means. He was hiding pretty much nothing. He was, right? He was, as far as Yichus is concerned, he was excellent. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum, Rav Yishum, and Yod Sadek, and Ma'amid, and Parnas, and Sibar, Elaim King, Kupash Oshratzim, Tulu Yolom Yachorav. You want to appoint a leader over your community? So that's great. Make sure he has literally a basket of shrotzim hanging on his back. Meaning he's got to have, our expression, his skeletons in the closet. There's got to be something questionable about his lineage, and you need something like that. Why? So she'im tazuch ta'atawalav, amram lo chazor lacharecha. Because in a leadership position, so you run the risk of arrogance. In other words, you are now the leader and people do look up to you. So you run the risk of becoming arrogant. So if he has skeletons in the closet, if he's got poor yichus, so you just simply say, hey, you know what, take a look around you, turn around, and it'll hopefully mitigate the amount of arrogance that you're going to gain from being the leader. Good. And obviously the reference over here is to David HaMelech, whose lineage was questionable. Right, he comes from Rus. She was not only a convert, but a questionable convert. Questionable meaning at the time. Right, I'm describing the Gemara in Yevamos over here. But anyway, good. So that's the Gemara's distinction between Shaul and David. Correct. Right. Generally speaking, the absolutely correct. The Gemara says, don't remind a convert that he's a convert. On the other hand, if the arrogance is starting to get a little bit inflated, a little bit bloated, so it's just an opportunity. I don't know if others are supposed to remind him, but in other words, it's supposed to keep him in check. Okay. I'm Rav Yudah Merav, Mimnei Man and Shaul. So, Shaul was punished. And why was Shaul punished? And we noted yesterday that Shaul wasn't the only one who made mistakes. David made mistakes. In fact, the Gemara in yesterday's daf noted that David made more mistakes than Shaul. And Akash Baruch Hu, meanwhile, said, okay. Now, it's not like David went off scot-free. In other words, the Gemara pointed out yesterday, suffered a lot. We went through fourfold in terms of the onshim of David. But the melucha wasn't taken away from him, and meanwhile, by Shaul it was. So why was Shaul punished? Mimnei shemach lachvodom. Because Shaul wasn't prepared to protect his own honor. Shenamar v'nei b'li'al amru ma yoshin izev yivazev v'lo ivi alo mincha. So at the anointment of Shaul, so there were B'nai Belial, so people who were just unpleasant people, and and they had negative things to say. They were basically the comment section of their generation, but they weren't just the comment section though. In other words, they attached their name and their face to the criticism of Shaul. He's not going to save us, right? And they scoffed. Uksiv, and now we're right a lot of Shmuel Aleph, and now continuing along in the Pesukim where Shaul put together an army and went to war against Ammon. Vayal Nachash Ammoni vayichan al Yavesh Gilad vigomer, and Rashi fills in the rest. And basically, Shaul ran a successful campaign and he defeated the Ammonim. And this same group of people, again, the Gemara assumes that we know all this. And the same group of people basically said, right? Comment sections are going to comment section. So and they still disparaged him. And as far as what he responded, so you can see Rashi over here quotes the response of Shaul. So he says, "Vuhu amar," it's the last line of Rashi. "Vuhu amar lo yumas ish hayomazeh." And Shaul said, "No one's going to die today. I am the king," and people were disrespectful. And that normally falls under the category of morid b'malchus. And the king has absolute permission. And it sounds like from our Gemara, by the way, a little bit more than permission. But he's got to defend the honor of the king. And Shaul didn't. And so because he was mochel al hakavod, in other words, you and I, so we should be mochel al hakavod. But when it comes to the king, and you're a melech Yisrael, so you're not supposed to be mochel al hakavod. And the Gemara over here is critical over Shaul for not being mochel al hakavod. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum, Rav Yishum, and Yod Tzadik, called Tamil Chacham. Sheinu Nokim, and Oter, Kanacha, Sheinu Tamil Chacham. Okay, we get to now a couple words regarding Nekima Natira, not taking revenge, not bearing a grudge. So the Gemara starts off with a counterintuitive comment, meaning you would think the Torah says very clearly and pretty absolutely that one is not allowed to take revenge and one is not allowed to bear a grudge. And the Gemara over here starts this very short discussion with a counterintuitive comment. If you're Tam Chacham and you're not no came v'note kanachas, you don't take revenge and you don't bear a grudge like a snake, so ain't no Tam Chacham. You're not a Tam Chacham. Okay, v'haksiv, the Gemara says, now wait one second. I have a question. Now, it's so funny. Under normal circumstances in the Gemara, the questions are coming from subtle places. A Mishnah, a Braisa, a Diuk, a deduction. Over here, the question is pretty simple, and that is, open up a Chumash and read it. And the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'aksiv, v'losi kom, v'losi tor. So the Torah says, you're not allowed to take revenge. You're not allowed to bear a grudge. Like, what is going on over here? Rabbi Shimon ben Yoel Tzadik is saying, you're a Tam Chacham, you know what? You better take revenge. You better bear a grudge. And if you don't, you're worth your weight as being a Tam Chacham. So that, of course, is really strange. So the Gemara says, no, hahu b'mamonu dechsiv. So the Gemara says, when the Torah says that you're not allowed to take revenge or bear a grudge, that is in monetary law. D'tani will enter Nebraisa. Now, already the Rishonim make this point. If you look carefully in the Chumash where it says lo sikom v'lo sitor, and you look contextually around it, you'll see that it really is talking about monetary. Now, on our own, we wouldn't have made the distinction, but the Gemara over here clearly makes that distinction. The Gemara goes on to describe the Ahuv Mamanu Dichsiv. We are on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We're three lines down with Gemara quotes to Braisa. Ezu Nikima Vezu Natira. So what is Nikima? What is Natira? So Nikima Amar Lo Hashleni Magalech. So simple examples of what Nikima would look like. So I go to my neighbor and I say, Can I borrow your saw? So Amar Lo Lav. And his response is, nah, I have one, but I'm just not interested in lending it to you. So lamacha amar lo hashileni kardumech. Now the next day, so reciprocated request, can I borrow your saw? And amar lo, eni mashilecha kedach shel hashileni. So this is what's called simple human nature. You didn't lend me your saw, I'm not lending you mine. Okay, that's zui nekima. That's a perfect illustration of what nekama looks like. The important point for us over here is that this is in monetary regard. Meaning, I asked him to borrow, he said no. He asked me to borrow, I say no. The Ezu in Natira. Now give me an example of what Natira looks like, what's bearing a grudge. Amar lo, hashaleni kardumech, amar lo, lo. And, so we start off with the same request. Can I borrow your saw? Neighbor says no. And lamacha, amar lo, hashaleni chalukech. And the next day, your neighbor comes over to you and says, can I borrow, a shirt? So amar lo, halach. And so the person starts off with a positive response, sure. But then it goes a little bit off the rails. Eini kamoscha. You know, I'm not like you. Shelo ha-shaltani zu, shelo ishaltani. You know, you didn't lend to me, but I'm prepared to lend to you. And that's what's called bearing a grudge. And the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. So zui natira. That's an example of natira. So comes out over here. That right now at this point, at this juncture of the Gemara says that the lo sikom, lo sitor of the Torah is only in monetary issue. But if it's something like a personal affront, somebody personally slighted you, so as a Tam Chacham, so you should you should take revenge and you should bear a grudge, right? But let's not conclude as of yet. Vitzari degufa lo, the Gemara says, now, really, for personal affronts, you're really supposed to take a grudge, va'atan, you will learn to nebraisa. Ha'ne elavim, ve'ena ovim, shomim cherpasam, ve'ena meshivim, somebody who accepts embarrassment, doesn't return the embarrassment, simply hears the cherpa, hears people degrade him, and he doesn't respond, osim me'ava v'smechim b'yasurim, and the person just simply accepts the suffering, alema kasav omer, v'avav kitzesa shemesh begvura so. So he's beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it sounds pretty clearly that even for personal affronts, you're not allowed to respond. So right now we're trying to explain the comment of Rav Yochanan b'shem Rav Shimon ben Yoel Tzadok that a Tam Chacham is supposed to take a grudge. And meanwhile, the Braisa over here clearly states that even on a personal affront, you're not supposed to take a grudge. So l'olam denaka le'belibe. So the Gemara says, yeah. So here's the balance. And the balance is that when somebody personally offends you, so what you're supposed to do is nakale believe it, hold it in your heart. Meaning a clear and direct response and a retaliation. So, excuse me. So no, that you're not supposed to do. But what you are supposed to do is you're supposed to not to forget. And so practically speaking, what does that mean? Okay, good. So based on today's daf, so what we learn now is that, okay, I'll remember. But okay, but you're not allowed to respond. You're not allowed to retaliate. Certainly on monetary issues, that you should totally remove. So what does that mean that you're supposed to remember? So Rashi writes over here, So Nakabilibe, Rashi's the third line down. V'imba acher linkom nikmaso b'kiyum hamishpat. So yishtok. So it means as follows. Let's say there's an occasion, there's an opportunity where somebody else now is exacting vengeance on this person. So you, the Talmud Chacham, who were personally offended, so your response should be, oh, okay, good. Right. Don't say this, but think this. You know, he deserved it. Right? He personally offended me. So Rashi says is that the practically speaking, what it would mean is that if an opportunity were to come up where somebody else is now taking it out on him, so you could just simply quietly agree, you know what? Good. That's Rashi's understanding of the Gemara over here. Now, finally, the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So the Gemara says, yeah, but on the other hand, somebody's mavir al-midosav, right? Somebody wronged me, and really, it's not right what he did. And basically, mavir al-midosav, you know what? I'm going to let it go. So the Gemara says, it's not only praiseworthy, but mavir lo kol pshav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do the same thing to you. Meaning, obviously, we're all imperfect. And so if I let things go for other people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the same thing with me. Mida keneged mida. So once again, you're a Talmud Chacham, and what we're seeing right now is that you should hold it in your heart and you shouldn't bear some sort of grudge. And again, not to actively retaliate, but to passively allow somebody else to retaliate. So, but meanwhile, you should be Mavir Amidosav. The Gemara says, the Mephais alo Mephais. The Gemara says, no. Mavir Amidosav means that when someone comes in and asks forgiveness from you, so then you for sure, not only should you accept the forgiveness, but then you should totally let it go. But if they don't ask forgiveness from you and it's a personal affront, so then you shouldn't let it go and you should remember. And again, like Rashi said, and then if in the event somebody else lets it out on him, so you could passively and quietly agree, yeah, that seems about right. Okay, from our Gemara over here, what seems extremely clear is that there is a distinction to be made by the issues of lo sikum v'lo sitor. And that when it comes to mamonos, when it comes to monetary issues, so then that's the issue of the Torah. When it comes to personal affronts and personal slights, so it sounds like over here is that there is a little bit of room for negotiation in terms of there's a little bit of nekima netira that's allowed. That's what it sounds like from our Gemara over here. It's not the end of the story. It's not the end of the discussion. There's more discussion to be had. There's a Gemara Megillah on Daf Chafei. I wrote it down. There's a Gemara Megillah on Daf Chafei regarding the practice of Mar Zutra. So we're going to get to Megillah, you know, pretty much this year. So that needs to be taken into consideration from the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah. It also seems like there really is no room for Nekima Netira, even for personal slights. So the truth of the matter is that this is just the beginning of the discussion, and there's much more discussion to be had, but this is a daf, and so we don't always get to do a deep dive. In fact, we never get to do a deep dive, but certainly there's more discussion to be had about this particular topic. Anyway, it's certainly curious, by the way, why are we here? Meaning it's a great discussion. It's an extraordinarily important discussion. So why are we here? So presumably it falls back to Shaul, meaning that the Gemara was critical about Shaul that he didn't for the B'nai Belial, so he didn't extract vengeance and he didn't retaliate against them. But the Gemara was critical about Shaul for that. But again, Shaul was a melech, and so for the melech does have to retaliate. Okay, and it seems from the Gemara that Shaul just didn't see himself as being the melech, and you know, and he behaved like you and I should behave, which is that we shouldn't retaliate. Okay, that's the that was the segue of the discussion. We are in Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We are a little bit less than halfway down, and now we're going to go back to our Mishnah. So we're talking now about the counting of the Kohen. Now, the Mishnah said that as far as the Kohen extending his finger, so the Mishnah said, you know, he puts out one finger or he puts out two fingers. And the Gemara says, what? What does that mean, one finger, two finger? Now, Rashi, throughout the entire discussion, I mentioned this yesterday, let's just reiterate, Rashi, throughout the whole discussion, says it doesn't matter how many fingers he's putting out. You're counting that as one. So one finger, two fingers, you count that as one. Okay. So then the question begs, meaning, right? Rashi fits in very well to the back and forth in the Gemara right now. So the question really begs. So if you're putting out two fingers, why would anyone put out two fingers? What's the point of putting out two fingers? Okay. So that's the Gemara's question. So, umahin motzian achas oshtayin. Hashtashayin motzian achas mibaye. So let's just try to make sense of the Mishnah. You put out two fingers. The Mishnah tells you, it needs to tell you, put out one finger. And really, just to expand on the Gemara's question, what would be the point of putting out two fingers? Meaning, if one finger counts you as one, so then why even put out two fingers to begin with? So, Amar Rav Chisda lo kasha, kam bebari, kam becholah. So the Gemara says, look, somebody who is strong and has the dexterity to put out one finger. Now, as far as dexterity is concerned, it does not take a lot of skill to just simply put out one finger, right? Most of us could do. But if somebody is in the state of being a chola, if he just does not have full control of all of his fine motor skills, so then, yeah, putting out one finger would be problematic. So then, for that person, you'll put out two fingers. That's just a simple explanation of our Mishnah. It's certainly curiosity to me. All right, if you have a Kohen who's in that kind of physical condition where he can't just put out one finger, so he's going to be in good shape enough to do the avoda. All right, the Gemara doesn't make a comment, but certainly I'd be curious. So Vatanya, but the Gemara says, I'm sorry, not right. Vatanya over here means we're going to corroborate. Right, normally Vatanya means we're going to question. Over here, it's corroboration. So the Hatanya Achas Motzien Shtein Motzien. So the Bryce over here says that when you're the Kohen and you're sticking out a finger, stick out one finger, not two. Ba'medvar Mamorim Bebari. That's talking about a Kohen who's healthy. Ava B'chola Filu Shtein Motzien. But if you're sick and you simply don't have the physical dexterity to just simply put out one finger, and you need to put out two fingers, so then you put out two fingers. Va'yichidim Motzim Shtein Ve'in Monam Lam Alachas. Now, as far as Yichidim, Rashi describes over here, people are really sick. Right, Rashi over here, I mean, he writes this. Rashi over here writes that we're talking about somebody who's like bedridden. So these yechidim. Rashi's towards the top of the Amud. Becholin she'enam yoshvim imshar b'nei adam. El shochvin o yoshvim levadam. Right, they're so sick they're bedridden. So again, I'll just re-ask the question one more time. Right, you're that kind of sick, and now you're there for the lottery, and what happens when you get selected? I'd advise maybe call in a sick day, but okay. Anyway, so the motziim shayim ve'ein monim al achas. Fine. Ve'ein monim lo al achas. So the Gemara says now. It doesn't matter how many fingers you stick out, you count it as one. The Gemara says, now, Vatanya, we did learn a brisa, in Mosian lo shlish, velo godo mimnea ramayim. So what you should not stick out is you shouldn't stick out your middle finger, you shouldn't stick out your thumb. But the im hotzi shlish monim lo, godo e monim lo. Now, sticking out your middle finger meaning just your middle finger. So sticking out your middle finger just by itself, so it's not advised, but if you do so, so it could still be part of the count. However, if you stick out your thumb, so at that point in time, that was intolerable. So velo od elo shalokem min hamemuna bepikia, and you're a Kohen, and you're gonna be that insolent that you're gonna be sticking out just your thumb. So you're gonna get whipped. Okay. So the obvious question. So I'm sorry. So my monalo nami acha. So the first the Gemara deals with the issue in which it almost sounds from the Braisa that you're going to be counted as two, but the Gemara says no. In other words, it doesn't matter what finger you stick out, doesn't matter how many fingers you stick out, you're always going to be counted as one. Okay, so the obvious question is that what's the difference between sticking out your middle finger versus your thumb, right? In other words, the recommended finger to stick out is your index finger, right? The pointer. That's the recommended finger. And again, if for the person who just lacks the dexterity to stick out the index without the middle, so then stick out both of them, fine. But the Braisa says to stick out your thumb, to stick out just your middle finger. So that is those are not recommended. But we just learned that there are levels. All right, your middle finger by itself shouldn't have done it. But okay, you're still part of the count. Your thumb, right? Not, we don't want to hear from you. Not only that, right? Come over here. And you're going to receive a right. Literally, you're going to receive a beating. For having done so. So as Rashi points out over here, it's good. I mean, it was clear from yesterday as well, but Rashi points out over here because as follows. When it comes to the middle finger, so you're trying to be cute, but you're not going to get away with any kind of cheating. However, if you stick out your thumb, not only trying to be cute, but you're trying to gain an advantage. Because what could happen is because the thumb is so far away from the other fingers, and the Kohen is now counting, so it could be that you'll stick out your finger and your thumb, And the Kohen, who's just, you know, the Kohen is counting. So, right, it's really early in the morning. It's not that particular outside. So he might count that as two. And in the event that you see that you're two away from being chosen, so here's what you do. You stick out your finger and you stick out your thumb. And so you'll cheat basically to get the avoda of the Trumas Hadeshen or whatever pious it is. And so for that, in other words, for an attempted cheating, so for that, so basically, okay, so for that, you're going to get whipped. Cohen's not going to make a mistake with the middle finger. Still not recommended, but you're not going to, the Cohen is counting is not going to make that kind of mistake when it comes to the middle finger, but when it comes to the thumb, so you may get away with cheating. So anyone who even attempts to do so, there'll be serious consequences. So my pekia, so the Gemara over here just says, you're going to get whipped. Now I explained it, but the Gemara is going to take a moment to explain it. In other words, it wasn't clear from the word pekia that it means whipped. So my pekia, Amarav Madra. My Madra, Amarav Papa, Matrika Detai De Pasik Reshe. It's a whip. Rashi over here gives a little bit more detail than what I just gave. It's a whip where the end of the whip, like basically it splays into thinner strips. And Rashi describes what you do is in his days, you would hit the horse with it and you know, and he'd really feel it. And that's how we would move faster. Okay, so basically, the Kohen who attempts to cheat, so that's what he has to look forward to. So we get to quote a Mishnah Shkalim. Okay, we were just here in the Daf Yomi. So the Mishnah Shkalim in the fifth parak describes how there was somebody who was an officer al ha-pekia. Okay, so he was an officer of pekia. So if you remember the Gemara Shkalim, which we did not so long ago, so we explained it. But here now we're in the Bavli, and so now the Gemara Yuma is going to take a moment to explain it because it does fit in with our discussion. So Amina Patilta. So I thought, meaning this is now Abai telling us what he originally thought. So I thought it was Patilta. I thought it was Wicks. Kedinan, a Mishnah Sukkah. So Mavli Machtisek Oanim Mehem Mehnehen. Mehen Hayu Mavkin or Vahen Hayu Madlikin. So we took the old clothing of the Kohanim, clothing that they wouldn't use anymore, and we repurposed them. Okay, this is recycling in the base of Mikdash. And what they would do is they would make wicks out of them. Now, wicks over here for the menorah could be, but Rashi over here says, yeah, but this is talking about contextually Sukkah, and we're talking about the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And we're going to learn together in Sukkah, by the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, you had these massive torches in the Ezos Nashim, four of them, and they were all lit. And it was the clothing of the Kohanim that were used as the wicks. Okay, that's what it is describing contextually. Anyway, so Abai says, so I thought that's pshat in the Mishnah and Shkalim. However, came to Shamanu L'detanya, but then I remember now that there is a discussion to be had in Yuma, meaning our discussion. V'lo od ela shalokim in amamuna bepikia. So the Kohen who attempts to cheat by putting out his thumb, so he's going to get whipped. So now I understand, amina mai pikia nagda. So now I understand that the officer that's in charge of the whips, so that's not the wicks, but that's rather the whips. So now I understand that's a better pshat in the Mishnah in Shkalim. Okay, so yesterday we encountered a story in the Mishnah regarding a disaster that ensued when they went with the original plan of racing to the top of the Mizbeach. They were neck and neck, and so one Kohen decided, you know what, I really want to win this race, and he pushed the other Kohen off the side of the ramp, and he broke his leg. That was a story that was related in Mishnah, and that prompted them to move from a system of racing to a system of lottery. Okay, it was a lottery is a less violent sport. Okay, so Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you another story. This is a Tosefta. So once again, this Bryce is describing a race up the ramp. They were neck and neck, and v'ratzim v'olim bekevish kadam echad mehem l'soch arba amashol chavero, and one was clearly going to win. So natzol sakim v'takalo belibo, and so what did the other contestant do? So he took out a knife and he stabbed him. Okay. Unclear, by the way. In other words, the other one clearly won the race. It was to gain an advantage. Whatever the case is, obviously, this went off the rail. So, Amad Rabbi Tzadok Amalos HaUlam. So Rabbi Tzadok stood by the stairs of the Ulam. Rashi over here. Really interesting Rashi over here. I'll come back to it in just a moment. The Amar Achena Beis Yisrael Shamu Shimu. And he's basically trying to get the people to understand, right? This went totally off the rail. And this is, it's crazy. So Harehu Amakiyam Ikimatse Chalab Adamaviyetsu Zekanecha Vishoftecha. So and now we go back to the Egla Rufa. I know we were just here yesterday by the Egla Rufa, but the Egla Rufa is there to tell us about the sensitivity that we have to have to every single life. Somebody was murdered, and we don't know who the murderer is, and we have to go through a whole process and a whole procedure, and Zekanim need to take responsibility, and that's over one person who was killed. So Anu Amila Havi Egla Rufa. Who's going to be bringing the Egla Rufa over here? Alair, Alazaros, the city of Yerushalayim, the Azaros, or the Gemara later on is gonna follow up some questions. But anyway, so Gal Kol Am BeBechiyah, everyone started crying, meaning they understood that somebody was murdered, and now he understood, right? This should engender a reaction, and he got the proper reaction from the people. Like, this has just gone totally off the rails. Now the father of the Tinok, right? The Tinok over here. Not a baby, but, you know, to every parent, the child is a baby. So the parent comes over and he sees that his child is a ghost, meaning he's not yet dead, but he's close to it. So Amar Arei Kaparas Chem. So the first thing that he says is that it should be a kapara. Okay, so far so good. However, he also adds Va'adayin Benit Ben Farper Velonit Masakin. He says, you know, my son's not dead yet, so let's take the knife out. So that the knife doesn't become tame. Okay, so obviously, the first statement, understandable. Second statement, impossible to understand. Right, that he wants to make sure that the knife doesn't become tame, that even his thoughts are going there right now. It's rather amazing. The Gemara is going to have comments on it. The Tahara of Kalim was more endearing to them, had more value to them, than that of murder. The pasuk says, "V'gam dam nakish shafach minashar abeimod asher lo asher maleis Yerushalayim pelepe." So we see by Menashe that murder was so prevalent that it was common in the base of Mikdash. So where their values were askew was over the shvichas damim. Murder didn't bother them as much. Okay. There's a lot to follow up over here in the story, and the Gemara is going to have a lot of follow-up questions. Just a really interesting Rashi. Before we go with all the Gemara's follow-up questions over here, so Rashi says that on the Gemara that we just saw regarding this Rebbe Tzadok who was on the Malos HaUlam, so Rashi writes over here, here it is. So Amalos HaUlam, it's toward the bottom of the Rashi's Dibra Maschal Amalos HaUlam Baharabayis Ulamos Harbe. So we're not talking about the Ulam in the Azara, but rather we're talking about the Ulam in the Harabayis. Meaning Ulam is just simply an antechamber, and generally we refer to it as the Ulam in front of the Heichal. But Rashi says that's not what we're describing over here, but rather it's in the Harabayis. It's another Ulam. So Banasham Hordos Kamo Shekasa B'Sefer Yosef Ben Gurion. So and Herod, as he made a lot of enhancements and a lot of remodeling of the Beis Hamikdash, so he added a lot of ulamos, and he quotes the sefer called the sefer of Yosef Ben Gurion. Probably what Rashi's making reference to over here is Josephus, meaning Rashi had a copy, and Rashi obviously read it, knew it. And so he's pointing it over here in terms of helping us understand part of the story. Okay, just a interesting historical aside. So this story, by the way, yesterday's Mishnah. So that story was crazy. This story multiplied by a factor. Okay, it's more than crazy. Right? It's a bizarre story. And the Gemara over here has got lots of questions, follow-up questions. So Hai Maisa Kadam. So the Gemara is assuming right now that it's not two versions of the same story, but rather there were two separate episodes, to which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Now the Gemara says, now, in terms of which story comes first, because that we don't know, meaning our Mishnah and the Brisa we just learned are not telling us which happened relative to which. So let's assume for a moment that the Tosefta story that we just did, that occurred first. So the Gemara says, now it's impossible to understand. Meaning, for that, the rabbis didn't respond with, let's do a lottery. And then when somebody breaks a leg, oh, you know what? Now let's do a lottery. That's you can't imagine. So, Ella, Dinishba, Raglo, Kadim, Vekemet, Takinu, Paisa, Arba Amos Mayavidatayu. So the Gemara says, okay, so the broken leg story comes first. So the Gemara says, okay, but we know what the response was to the broken leg story, which is, we're going to do a lottery. Okay, it'll be a non-violent sport. We'll just simply do a lottery. So then how do we get to the story of the one coin stabbing the other coin? Okay, so the Gemara says, Ella. La'olam d'shvichas damim kadin. So the Gemara says, okay, I know we rejected it just moments earlier, but we're going to have to say this. The story of the shvichas damim actually came first. Umikaras avri kri ba'amahu. And what did the Chachamim say? That's got to be an outlier. Meaning, that's just simply anecdotal. There is no way that that's normal behavior amongst the Kohanim. Right? A little bit of competition. One is outpacing the other. And it ends in murder. Like they thought to themselves, that doesn't need a takana. That's just simply an outlier. However, kevin dechazi afilu meimela asuli de sakana takin rabban paisa. But then they saw one coin pushing another coin, and they understood it's no outlier. Meaning, oh, now we get it. This is you throw a little bit of competition to the kohanim, and this is simply how they're going to behave. So then they understood that the system has to change. So that's the progression of what happened as per the Gemara's conclusion. Amen Rabbi Tzadok Amalos Ulam Vamar Achina Beis Yisrael Shamu Shimu Harei Omer Ki Yimatzei Chalab Adama. So Anan Milahavi Alayir Alazarus. So the Gemara over here has a follow up question. You know, the Gemara is great, by the way, because obviously this is an emotionally charged event, and the Gemara right now is focused on, you know, the language that he used and the psukim in the Torah that he quote. And you know, and the Gemara is always interested in the halachic aspects. That's the Gemara. So the Gemara says, okay, so as part of his hesped, he says, who's going to bring the Egla Rufa? And the Gemara says, Yerushalayim Basasuri Egla Rufa who? Now you know, for Yerushalayim, they're not going to bring the Egla Rufa. Devahatanya, we learned in a braisa. So, Asar Dvarim Nemru, Yerushalayim Vizuachas Man. So there were 10 things we said regarding Yerushalayim, this being one of them. And that is, we're on the top of the Amud Beis, Enim Avi Egla Rufa, they don't bring the Egla Rufa. So what comes out over here is that Egla Rufa is not born Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Tzadok, as strong as his words are, and he's trying to elicit a reaction, a response, but he's saying something that's halachically not correct. You're not going to bring the Egla Rufa and the Ezara. And Rashi over here writes on the top of the Amud, the reason why in Yerushalayim you don't bring the Egla Rufa is because Yerushalayim is federal property. We just had this discussion in the first parak of Yuma. So Yerushalayim is not amongst the Shvatim. Only properties and cities that are owned by Shvatim, only they're eligible for the Egla Rufa, but not Yerushalayim. Right? Lonis Chalkul Shvatim, says Rashi, the top Rashi in the Amud. And that's why they're not going to bring the Egla Rufa. But as we know, however, we just saw this in the first parak, that's open for a debate. There are those who are of the opinion that Yerushalayim was divided amongst the Shvatim. Remember the Yehuda Binyamin and the dividing line that went right up to the Mizbeach? Okay, so according to that opinion, do they bring the Egla Rufa? Okay, so Tosus over here briefly comments on that. But meanwhile, whatever the case is, let's assume that there's no Egla Rufa for Yerushalayim, and so what Rabbi Tzadok is saying is simply not correct. So the Gemara says, "Va'od lo noda meikauksi v'hanoda meikau." On top of that, Egla Rufa is where we don't know who the murderer is. Over here, we know exactly who the murderer is. So there wouldn't be an Egla Rufa over here. So Ela Kedei Laharbos Bebichia. So the Gemara says, okay, but he wanted to elicit a response. He wanted people to cry. Not for the sake of just getting people to cry, but in other words, to understand and inform them that this is just simply unacceptable. And it's crazy. And so he's saying things which are, and now this part's interesting. In other words, what comes out now, he's saying things that are not halachically accurate. But if it elicits a response, so that's good. Okay. Right. Again, I know I'm being extraordinarily dry about this, but just in general, do we have the right, do we have the license to say things which are halachically inaccurate, but, you know, it's going to get a response. It's going to get a reaction. From the Gemara over here, it sounds like, yeah, that's fine. Right. Whatever. It's hard to see how, those ends justify those means. But okay. Anyway, Amar Ba'aviv Shaltina Komatsu Kishuma Farper. So Amar Hu Are Kaparaschem. Va'adayim Pini Kayam. Lamdecha Shekash Olayim Taras Kelim Yostim Ishvichas Damim. Okay, the Gemara now wants to follow up on the next part of the Tosefta. The father comes along. So the first thing he says is Hare Kaparaschem. This should serve as a Kapara. And then he said, "Oh, by the way, let's pull the knife out now because he's not dead yet, and we'll ensure that the knife doesn't become tame." And to which the Gemara says, "Now, right, the Braisa said, right? They were totally askew, beyond tilted in terms of where their value should be. Meaning, the Shlichus Damim obviously is egregious. I mean, I'm making too obvious a point. But in other words, but at this point in time, it should totally overshadow the tahara of the knife. And meanwhile, to him, the tahara of the knife right now was really important, even though his son is currently dying. So, ibaylu shvichas damim hu dezal aval taharas kelim kedekai makayma odimo shvichas damim kedekai makayma aval taharas kelim hi dechamira. Now, the Gemara says, look, they clearly had tilted values, and it was certainly off balance, and that's an understatement. But the Gemara wants to know. Is it the pshat that basically they understood the severity of murder? It just happens to be that they were totally askew when it came to taharas kelim. And for them, taharas kelim was more valuable to them than shvichas damim, but they pretty much knew that shvichas damim was bad. That's one option. Or the other option is that taharas kelim, you know, they were pretty much at a correct valuation of taharas kelim. It just happens to be that life was cheap. That's the other option. And Tashma, the Gemara says, now, generally speaking, that would be an impossible question to answer, but it happens to be that if you go back to the Braisa actually tells us the answer. Right? The Gemara is just simply fleshing this out. And that is, Midikan Nasiv Le Tamud, Vegam Dam Nakisha Fachmanasha, Shmaimina Shvichos Damim Mudazal Vataros Kelim Kedekaima Kaima. So the Gemara says, yeah, but now you look at the end of the Braisa, now you understand that the end of the Braisa is telling us that life was cheap. Meaning that it was their value of life that was really off tilt. They didn't really give life much value. And we see that by Menashe. Now it happens to be, by the way, again, I know I'm throwing out a lot of questions today, but it happens to be that the proof by Menashe is a little bit strange because Menashe was during Bais Rishon. We're discussing a story that took place during Bais Sheni. Now during Bais Rishon, we just saw this in the first parak of Yuma. So by Bais Rishon, why was it destroyed? Because of Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayis and Shvichas Damim. Okay, so life was cheap during the first base of Mikdash, right? That continued in the second base of Mikdash? Our Gemara seems to assume yes, it did. Okay, but anyways, the Gemara's conclusion was that for them, their off-tilt value was regarding life and how to properly value life. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, Adkan. Takes us now to the end of the, let's say, first half of today's daf. I know we're more than beyond the first half of the daf today, but now we are going to move on to the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen and Haramas Hadeshen. Okay, in the beginning of Parshat Tzav, forgive me, I don't have a chumash in front of me right now, but in the beginning of Parshat Tzav, so the Torah outlines for us the mitzvahs of Trumas Hadeshen and Haramas Hadeshen. You know what? What's it called? Let's just quickly grab either a siddur or a chumash, either one. David, what do you have in front of you? A siddur? Happens to be that we say these psukim in the beginning of Shachris by the Karbanos. So Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. This is the beginning of Parshat Tzav. So Tzavis Aron Vesbanav Lemor Zos Torah Sarolai Yolam Mokdalam Mizbech Kol Alayla Adaboker Veishem Mizbech Tukad Bo. V'Lavash. It's good. V'Lavash Kohen Mido Bad Umechnesei Vad Yobasha B'Saro. So what the Kohen is going to do is he's going to get dressed. Now, it's interesting, and the Gemara is going to make these points. So I'm just, you know, foreshadowing, preparing us. So the Torah's description over here of the Kohen, who is about to do the Trumas Hadeshen, it's coming up in just a moment. So it says that the Kohen's going to get dressed. But the Torah does say, how is he going to get dressed? So he'll put on some pants. He'll put on midovad. So he'll put on, well, let's call it a tunic. And umichnas evad, yobasha pisaro. And he'll also put on his pants. Okay. Now, why is that interesting? Because the Kohen wears four articles of clothing. And over here, the Torah is describing two of the four. Okay. The Harim is Hadeshen, and then he'll do the Trumas Hadeshen. Again, that shovel full of ash that's done every single day. the first avodah that's done every day. And he takes that shovel full of ash and he places it next to the mizbeach. So again, we learned already numerous times, it's not next to the mizbeach, it's next to the ramp that goes up to the mizbeach. Ufashat es begadav lavash begadim acherim. Torah goes on to describe that he's going to take off the clothing and he's going to put on other clothing. And then there's hotzas adeshin. And then he's going to take out the ash. I didn't need to read the rest of the parsha, but anyway, so that is the mitzvah of both Trumas Hadeshen and Haramas Hadeshen. Okay, Trumas Hadeshen, here's what's clear. It's done every day. And we learned that there's a lottery in order to do the Trumas Hadeshen, to establish which kohen's going to do it. And it's, so it's done every single morning. Haramas Hadeshen, I'm sorry, Hotza'as Hadeshen, so the removal of the remainder of the ash, is that done every day? Not clear. Rashi over here in our Gemara, I'll show it to you tomorrow. So Rashi writes that the Hotzas Hadeshen is as needed. Sometimes there's going to be a lot of ash on the Mizbeach, sometimes there's not. So as needed, when necessary, when you're just a pile of ash on the Mizbeach is just too great, so then removal. So we have the Kohen doing the removal services. The mitzvah of Hotzas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen, so that's formal, and that's done every single day. Good. Read the Rambam. I don't have a Rambam in front of me right now, but read the Rambam, and the impression you get from the Rambam is that both Trumas Hadeshen and Hotzas Hadeshen is done every single day. Okay. With all that stated, so Fashat v'lavash begadim acharim v'otzi es Hadeshen. So the Gemara over here just, you know, assumes that we know the Psukim, so just, you know, a couple excerpts here and there, and the Gemara now starts off the discussion. I think I left out the words Tana Rabbanan. Anyway, this is a Braisa. So it's going to teach us some basics regarding the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen and also the mitzvah of Hotzas Hadeshen. Now, this is proper placement of this discussion because here in the second parak of Yuma, which we're in right now, we just started yesterday, so it introduced us to the first pious of the day in which it's going to be over the Trumas Hadeshen and Hotzas Hadeshen. So with that stated, so now the Braisa comments. So Shomani Kederach Yom HaKippurim Shaposheit Big Day Kodesh V'lovish Big Day Chol. And so now, what does it mean that the Kohen is going to go through a wardrobe change? Right? That's what the Torah says. Takes off his clothing and then puts on other clothing. So what does that mean? So where else do we have that in the Torah where the Kohen goes through a wardrobe change? It's only one time in the Torah where that happens, and that, of course, is by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Right? He's going to go through a number of wardrobe changes. We're going to be discussing it in great detail in our Masechta. So I might have thought that Stam, a regular Kohen, who's doing the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen and transitions now to doing Hotzas Hadeshen, so he also goes through a wardrobe change. Now, by the Kohen Gadol, I understand what a wardrobe change is going to mean. You go from the Begadim of Yom Kippur, special white Begadim of Yom Kippur, to the standard Begadim of a Kohen Gadol, the Shmona Begadim. For a regular Kohen, what is it? There's only one uniform for a standard Kohen. So what would it mean by standard Kohen? So the Gemara is now asserting it must mean that he takes off the Big Day Kahuna and he puts on his weekday clothing. So Big Day Kosh V'lovish, Big Day Chol. So that's what I would have thought. So Tamalamar, Fashad is Begadav, Lavash Begadim Echarim, Megish Begadim Shalovish, Lebegadim Shaposheit, Malahalam Big Day Kosh, Avkan Big Day Kodesh. So to which the Tanakama of this Brisa says, no, we have a Hekesh. Since the Torah describes how he's taking off his clothing and he's putting on his clothing, so that tells us that the clothing that he put on is like the clothing that he took off, meaning it's going to be Big Day Kahuna. Now, if that's true, so then the obvious question, Imke Matamalamar Acherim. So what does it mean he puts on other clothing? What's the other clothing? Right? It's like when I go through my closet in the morning. Oh, am I going to take that white shirt or am I going to take that white shirt? Okay? It's easy to get dressed. I'm just telling you. It's wonderful. So what does the Torah mean when the Torah says Acherim? So the Gemara says Pchusin Mehen. Okay, so the Gemara says what it means by that is the clothing that he puts on for the Hotzas Hadeshen is going to be Big Day Kahuna, but it's going to be a little bit worn out. Now, wearing torn clothing by the Kohen, unacceptable. The Gemara in Zvachim, second Perek, so he said that the Avoda will be Psul if the clothing is torn. We're not talking about torn, we're talking about worn. Okay, it's worn out a little bit. So for the Hotzas Hadeshen, look, it's basically, you're cleaning ash. For the Trumas Adeshin, it's a little bit more formal. You're just taking a shovelful off. So you could do it and keep your cleanliness. But for the Otzas Adeshin, you still need to wear Big Day Kahuna, but it could be worn out clothing. That's all as per the Tanakhama. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Achayim Vahotzi. So Rabbi Eliezer says, yeah, I know the Pasuk says the word Achayrim. Achayrim's not going on the clothing. You know what Achayrim's going on? The Kohen. Other Kohanim. What does that mean? Who are other Kohanim? Limit al-Kohanim, Balimamim, Shikshem, Lotzi Adeshin. According to the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, a really interesting Shita, you could be a Kohen Balmum. Now we all know a Kohen Balmum, we just read it in last week's Parsha. A Kohen Balmum can't do the Avoda. And yet, according to Rabbi Eliezer, yeah, but he could do Hotzas Adeshin. Because presumably, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Hotzas Adeshin is not an Avoda. Amar Amar, so the Gemara says, okay, let's go back. Let's Chazer. Acherim, Amar Amar, Acherim Pchusim Ehem. So this position of the Tanakhama, that the Acherim is going on other clothing, it means worn out begadim. So, Kidatan Debe Rabbi Yishmael. So that is in alignment with Rabbi Yishmael. The Gemara is just simply going to match the Tanakhama, the Bryce we just learned, with the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael. What is the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael? The Tan Debe Rabbi Yishmael, Begadim Shabishal Behem Kedera, Le Rabo, Lo Yimzuk Behem Kos Le Rabo. The clothing that you cook for your master is not the clothing you should be serving your master. In other words, when you're cooking in the kitchen, so your clothing is going to get dirty, right? You put on an apron. So and when you're serving, so it should be different clothing. So basically, it's a mashal. When the Kohen is doing the avodah of Trumas Adeshin, okay, so he should be wearing his Big Day Kahuna. Meaning, yes, he's taking ashes off, but it's just one shovelful and he could keep it clean. But when taking off the ashes, meaning Hotzas Adeshin, so there, it should be different clothing, meaning worn out clothing. Okay, so an alignment between the Shita of Rebbe, of the Tanakhama with that of Rebbe Yishmael. Okay, we're going to pause here, meaning the machlokes between Rebbe Shlokesh and Rebbe Yochanan, which really, truth of the matter is, it's going to go into tomorrow's daf. So we'll stop over here. This is a good point to pause. Let's quickly recap. Our daf today started off with a continuation of the distinctions to be made between Shaul HaMelech and David HaMelech. And so we talked about how it's good that David had skeletons in his closet. Comes from not only converts, but controversial converts. So that's a good thing. A leader should have a little bit of a tainted yichus. Okay, it'll keep his ego in check, was the point of the Gemara. We also talked about how Shaul was rebuked, reprimanded, criticized in today's daf for not being mochel on his kavod. He was a melech, and there were Bnei Belial who made fun of him, who made light of him, and he wasn't mochel on his kavod. The Gemara says that's not good. Gemara then on the top of Chagim Amad Aleph went into a really interesting discussion about, is there any room for nekama? Is there any room for netira? And the Gemara's conclusion is, yeah, there's a little bit of room. Okay? But again, we just scratched the surface of that topic, right? I feel bad, meaning it's a really important topic, and we just scratched the surface. There's more to discuss. Okay? Then we spoke this morning about the coin sticking out a finger. One finger, two fingers, how do you make sense of that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how to make sense of it. If the coin has the, has a coronation where it can stick out one finger, which, generally speaking, it's easy. So you stick out one finger, you should do so. But if he just simply lacks the coronation, the physical ability to stick out one finger, and he has to stick out two, so fine, he's a chola, so stick out two fingers. Sticking out just your middle finger alone, you shouldn't do it, but it's okay. Sticking out your thumb, so then that's attempted cheating. So for that, he's going to be not only reprimanded, he's going to get whipped. And the Gemara spent a couple of minutes discussing the Mishnah Shkalim and the making of the whips, right? Not the wicks, like Abai originally thought, but rather the whips. Okay. We spent time in Chav Gimel Amud Aleph with another tragic story about a race up the ramp that ended not in a broken leg, but rather ended in murder. And it goes without saying that the story went totally off the rail. And the Gemara quoted that Tosefta. First wanted a sequence. Which story occurred first? Our Mishnah's leg break or the Braisa's murder? And the Gemara said, oddly enough, the murder occurred first. They thought it was an anomaly. And then they realized, no, that's not an anomaly. Meaning that's just simply how they behave when you put competition into the mix. And the Gemara had a couple of other follow-up questions. And then on Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, so we started the sugya of Trumas Adeshin and Otzas Adeshin. And we started off this morning with a machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer in terms of the Torah's description of him changing out of his clothing in order to do Otzas Adashin. What does that mean? Tanakama says, I'll tell you what it means. You're still going to change into Big Day Kahuna, but they're going to be worn out Big Day Kahuna. In line with the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael, which is that it's dirty work. Don't wear the nicest Big Day Kahuna, but they still have to be Big Day Kahuna. And then we saw the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer this morning that said that when it comes to the mitzvah of Hotzah Sadeshin, right, that's the cleaning out of the rest of the ashes on the top of the Mizbeach, you don't even need a Kohen Tamim. It could be a Kohen Balmum, and that would work as well. Pretty much indicates that's not an avoda, but we'll come back to that point tomorrow.